Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio
Blog
Show.
Talk Radio.
Welcome to my Blog Talk Radio Show, Live Your Music. I'm Margot Joy Donator, and I'm broadcasting from Marin County, California. My guest for today's show is Serena Dyer. Serena is one of Wayne Dyer's 8 children. Today, Serena and I will be talking about what it's like growing up in a big family with spiritual parents, and she'll tell us what it's like to have Wayne Dyer as her dad. We'll also be talking about the music she hears calling her and the book she's writing with her dad. The title of Serena's book is Don't Die With Your Music Still In You, A Daughter's Response to Her Father's Wisdom, and it will be available later this year. To find out more about Serena Dyer and sign up for her newsletters, visit her website at www.serenadyer.com. That's SERENADYER.com. Hello, Serena, are you there?
I'm here. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me for my radio show, Live Your Music. I actually named the radio show Live Your Music because of that quote by your dad, don't die with your music still in you.
And oh, wow.
I kept saying to myself, how can I say don't die with your music still in you without the don't? And that's when I came up with Live Your Music, and I had been saying that to myself for the last few years, live your music, Margot, live your music, and reminding people to live their music. And I had heard that you thought that was one of the 10 secrets that he wrote about in 10 Secrets for Success and Inner Peace. That was one of the ones that really meant the most to you. Is that true?
That is true. I think actually it's the one I hear most often that resonates with most people that I talk to. I think there's something about the idea that we all came here with music to play, and it's just a matter of aligning with it and figuring it out and not dying having not played it. Who wouldn't that speak to, you know? That means something to everyone, I think.
It's so true. And I have a friend that when I told her about saying live your music, she said, well, you know, but what Wayne says about don't die with your music still in you really makes you think, oh, my God, I better hurry up and do it now, you know.
Well, right, because the only moment we have for sure is this one right now. So it's true. We better hurry up and do it now. We better at least start.
Yeah, at least start. That is so true. And before we get going too far, I just wanted to say that today is my husband's mom's birthday, and she's been gone for a lot of years, but we still think of her on her birthday every year. And I'm so happy to have you on my show on her birthday, and also to celebrate your mom and my mom and all the moms, as well as your dad, that have created us as their children and have taught us how to live our life the way we do. And I'm just so curious, and I'm sure that the people listening are curious, what is it like to have Wayne Dyer as your dad?
Well, I've definitely been asked that question a lot. It's actually the motivation for why I decided to write my book, because people want to know that, you know, does he live his talk? Is he really the real deal? And does he practice what he preaches, basically? And so what I always say is that I think that growing up with my mom and dad, both very spiritual parents, growing up with them as my parents has been an extremely safe environment for me. And I mm-hmm. think I can speak for my brothers and sisters as well. And what I mean by safe is that when you grow up hearing your parents telling you that you are a little piece of God and a little piece of the infinite perfection, you feel okay in your own skin. And you feel okay and safe to be who you are and who you came here to be. And that doesn't mean there aren't struggles. It doesn't mean there aren't ups and downs and still issues that I've had to deal with on my own. It just means that from the beginning, I had this understanding that I came here with a purpose, I came here with music to play, and who I am was created by God, and who I am is a piece of God. And therefore, everything that I am, everything that I like, everything that's inherent to me, everything that I feel enthusiastic about is all fine. It's all great. And growing up with that environment is just the safest feeling in the world for a kid. And I, you know, there's been some quirky things. We had monks that were friends that we chanted with as kids, and I learned transcendental meditation when I was 5, and there's always been sort of this quirky, funny side to both of my parents because they definitely beat to the drum of their own music. But overall, it's just been a really safe, loving, happy environment, and I'm really grateful to have grown up in such a home.
That's the way it looks from the outside, I have to say. I first heard about your dad when I was 23 years old, and my brother had just given me a book by Napoleon Hill called Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude, and I was staying at his apartment during that time, and I happened to watch The Tonight Show with him, and your dad was on talking about his book, Your Erroneous Zones. So at 23 years old was when I first heard your dad on the TV, and I thought, wow, that sounds like an interesting book. And I got the book, but I have to be honest, I didn't read it right away. I read Success Through a Positive Mental Attitude right away and started noticing that the people that I enjoyed being around the most were the ones that had positive attitudes. And it was, I think, maybe a year or two later when I was around 24, between 24 and 25, I decided to read your dad's book, Erroneous Zones, and the chapter in there called First Love made such a huge difference in the way I looked at love. And I was just rereading that just before Valentine's Day because I did a talk about that. And it really, what he had to say about it being unconditional, even back then when he was writing Erroneous Zones, he was talking about unconditional love. And it sounds like that's the kind of environment that you grew up in.
It is. And I think that even more than that, the lesson that I heard, that I felt growing up, was that it has to start with the self. And so I think that some people have said to me before, well, you're so lucky. If I had parents like that, I wouldn't ever have had any struggles or have dealt with any of the things that I've had, and my parents didn't treat me that way, and they didn't love me that way. And I often think, you know, even though my parents did, I still had to learn to offer, and I'm actually still learning to offer that same unconditional love to myself. Because if we accept that we cannot give away what we don't have, we can't give away $5 when we're walking down the street and someone says, hey, can you give me $5, and you don't have $5 in your pocket, you can't pull it out and give it away. Well, it's the same thing then, that we can't give away love, for example, if we don't have love for ourselves. And that's something that I've had to learn, to experience, to struggle with, to grow from. And it's something that I'm still trying to master now, is this idea that it all starts with the self, that that is the first love. And I heard it as a kid. You know, I heard that we have to love ourselves. We have to give that same unconditional support to ourselves. But I think I did as a kid. You know, I think I actually did when I was really young. It became much harder as I became an adult.
I think that that is so true. It sounds really true to me. I know that the hardest time for me was really in my, I'd say, mid-teens. Well, actually, probably around from 14 to 24 was really a hard time in my life, a time when I didn't accept who I was. I wanted to feel more accepted. I wanted to find love instead of realizing, like I did after I read your dad's book, Erroneous Zones, that I had to be love, that I had to be love, and that to love people whether they returned it or not. That was such an important aspect of it, because so many people would say, oh, well, don't tell them you love them, because what if they don't say it back? And just the feeling that you're loving someone is an incredible feeling.
Right. No, absolutely it is. And I think that the fear of, well, don't say it because they won't love you back, is just that. It's just a fear. And I grew up hearing things from A Course in Miracles, so I'll say one now. That mm-hmm. which is love cannot be fear, and that which is fear cannot be love. And if you're coming from a place of fear and you're approaching a relationship with fear, or you're approaching love with fear, it's not really love then. And the way to have real love, I think, is exactly what you said, is to be it. Is you first must become it if you want to offer it to anyone else. And that's been a lesson I've taken a long time to learn, and it's something I'm still learning, but I've realized through my own experiences that if we can't give away what we don't have, then we must start with the self. And if what we want is love, then we must have love for ourselves in order to attract the right person or relationships or family or friends into our lives that have that same love for us back, that we get what we are, not what we want.
Oh, that's so true. I've heard that said. I think it's your dad says that, and I've heard other people say it over and over again because of him. And you get what you are, and you attract what you are. So true. And another thing that I wanted to mention to you, that I know you're getting married this summer, and I know that it says on your website, I love what it says on your website about how, let's see, what did it say? Just before marriage, I can't remember exactly what it said. But
after college, before book, before marriage and children, all potential.
Yeah, I love that. It's so true. I mean, you are in a stage right now of all this potential. And thinking about getting married and having children, it makes me curious, how many children would you like to have after being one of eight?
I would like to have five.
I
like the odd number, and my older three siblings are all a significant number of years older than me. There's a gap, basically. Mm-hmm. There are three and then a big gap and then five. And the reason I would like to have five is because I know what it's like to grow up in the middle of five children. Because, mm-hmm. like I said, the older three were just a little bit older, so it was a different experience. They weren't in school with me at the same time. They weren't my age. Mm-hmm. We're good friends now because we're all adults, but at the time, the youngest five of us were like a pack. And mm-hmm. having siblings that really are your closest friends is an experience that cannot be put into words. It's like having people that always have your back, that poke fun at you and mm-hmm. teach you more about yourself than anyone else could ever teach you. And having my siblings and I be so close, I would love to have the same thing for my children, because my relationships with my brothers and sisters and my relationships with my parents, my nieces and nephews, it's like my family is so important to me. They're the air I breathe, and I would love to be able to recreate that for my children, because it's been so hugely positive and influential in my own life.
Oh, that's beautiful, Serena, and it sounds like having children and being a mom is definitely one of the things that you feel called to do, and that is the music that you're here to live. And I think you're going to be an amazing mom. I think they are going to be incredibly lucky to have you as their mom. And I also wanted to say, speaking of that, last week on my radio show, I had on a treasured friend of mine that I've known since college. His name's Robert Berry, and we talked about being parents. And he originally wasn't sure if he even wanted to have kids because of being in rock and roll, and wondering if that would actually take the edge off of his music. And I played a song that he wrote called The True Meaning of Love, which is, he wrote it after his daughter was born. She's 22 now, I think, something like that. But it ended up being one of the songs that was the most popular on one of his albums, is The True Meaning of Love. And when his little girl was a little baby, and actually 5 years before our son was born, excuse me, I listened to your dad's tapes, What Do You Really Want for Your Children? And I don't know if you've ever listened to those. I think they're on CD now. I still have the tapes. Have you ever heard those tapes?
No, I haven't, and I've never read the book, What Do You Really Want for Your Children, either. Even though I have it here, I've never read it.
Well, I have to tell you the honest-to-God truth is I have a signed copy of your dad's book, What Do You Really Want for Your Children, and I love seeing the book on my shelf. I love seeing it. But what I've really enjoyed the most is listening to your dad's stories on the tapes from Nightingale Conant, What Do You Really Want for Your Children. And on those, he talks about all the things that I wanted, is so true, that I wanted to have for our child and I'd love to have for other children. And he talks about to learn self-parenting, to have high self-esteem, to be risk-takers, to be stress-free, to have peaceful lives, to be self-disciplined, to celebrate present moments, to live a life of wellness, to be creative, and to feel a sense of purpose. And I just have to say a big thank you to your dad for creating those tapes, because the funny stories that he told on them, I think you were just a baby at the time when he recorded them. I was just re-listening to them recently before I had the conversation with Robert about it last week. And I don't know, it's like I've watched and observed and listened to you and Sky and Summer and Sands and all of you children growing up, hearing stories about it. And he's so funny in those tapes. It's definitely one of my favorites of all of his programs. I love his voice. I love hearing his voice. I think there's going to be a lot of people that agree with that one.
Well, you know, I have to say that as a kid growing up, I never was embarrassed of my dad because I always thought that he brought humor to everything we did. So even though he really didn't fit in at times, like, for example, I begged my parents when I was about 9 or 10 years old to go to Cotillion, which is like manners school. You learn like ballroom dancing, and you learn how to eat at a formal dinner with which silverware and how to hold your champagne glass. And I was like 10 years old, and I was dying to do this. And most kids are forced to go there. And I was begging my parents to go there, and they were like, oh, you know, we don't really believe in all those rules, but if it's what you want to do, you can do it. So I went, and the teacher would say to me, I cannot wait to meet your parents, because you are just the shining star of this class, because I was the only one that wanted to be there. So I learned everything the right way, and I would remember which fork you used for your custard in between meals, and, you know, I really took it seriously. And at the final class where your parents come in their tuxedo and your mom comes in her dress and you wear your dress and your gloves, and you show your parents over the course of a meal and then dancing everything you've learned. And in Boca Raton, where I grew up, this was very proper, and a lot of people had been doing this for generations. So this was important, and, you know, and it's kind of like the South, so there was this element of importance there. Anyway, the teacher told me, I'm so excited to meet your mom and dad because they've just raised such a lovely young lady, and I was just beaming. My dad comes in shorts and Birkenstocks and a shirt that's tie-dye that says, imagine all the people living life in peace. And I could just see the shock on my Cotillion teacher's face when she realized those were my parents. And I was sort of proud of that, even though I loved being the proper one and doing the right things. I had this sort of giggle to it, you know, that I can still remember to this day when we had to do the waltz for the father-daughter dance and my dad did the twist. And I was always so proud of his refusal to give up his own self just to fit in. And I was always sort of proud of his encouraging me not to give up my own nature just to fit in either. So even though I loved the seriousness and the formality of the Cotillion class, Mm-hmm. I also loved that he didn't. And that's such a clear and poignant memory that I have with both of my parents, because my mom was, I think she was crying. She was laughing so hard. She was doubled over watching my dad do the twist. And eventually everybody in the class was cracking up at the humor and all of it. But that is who my dad always was this funny guy. And I always loved that about him. I never really got embarrassed. I always felt this sense of pride that when my friends would sleep over and we would all swim in the pool and he would throw us in the pool and play these games, that everybody liked to be around him. And he wasn't like other dads, that even though he was dorky and he was weird, he also made us laugh. So I think that he's always approached life and raising his children with that same sense of humor that you pick up on in his tapes.
Oh, I'm sure he has. And that reminds me that I watched the new PBS show that he has done, and I can see clearly now. I saw it on Monday night. It was the first night it was shown here on our PBS, and I loved the show. It seemed like he was back to being more relaxed, more like he was in the earlier days. And I had been to the filming of the Inspiration one in San Francisco, and that was really an amazing experience. I got to sit up in the front row. That was through a bunch of coincidences that happened. And I got to talk to your mom. I got to meet her and talk to her because she was sitting right to my left, which was amazing. And got to meet your grandmother. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. And, of course, seeing Skye there, I just always love hearing her sing. And yet the one, I think the show that I'm enjoying the most is this new one. And I loved when you read the letter that you wrote to your dad. I just love that letter. And then the song that Alex Woodard created for Skye to sing, This Gift, it's a great gift. I love it.
Yeah, that letter was something that came out of a cruise that I did with my dad in the fall of 2012. And it was a really neat thing, you know. It's a really neat thing, I think, for a child to see their parent doing what they're passionate about, whether it's in the form of their career or in the form of them raising their children or in the form of them having a hobby or just being present. But it's a really neat experience. It's a really life-affirming experience for a child, I think, to experience their parent doing and living their dharma or their purpose. And that letter that I wrote came out of being on a cruise with him. I was the only family member, you know, there. It was just the two of us. And there was, I don't know, maybe 500 or 600 people on that cruise that had come from all over the world to hear him speak. And I was so moved. I mean, I really was so moved to see him up there doing what he feels called to do. And having a parent that has big dharma like that, you know, that has had to travel a lot and write a lot and remove himself from family situations at times in order to do his work has never really been a challenge for me. I don't think for my brothers or sisters either, because when somebody has something that they are so passionate about and feel so called to do, you understand and you take a back seat and allow them to live out what they are called to do. And I think that that's real love. And that letter came out of that feeling of real love that I had for my dad, not what he could do for me or provide me with, but just seeing him up there on the stage sharing himself with all of these people. And I never thought that this letter was going to be on PBS or turned into a song or read all over the world. I just wrote it because it was what I felt I needed to do at that time. And I'm so glad that I did, though, because it made me realize that sometimes it's the greatest gift for yourself to stop and say thank you. And thank you, saying thank you, has become like such a hugely important part of my life and my mindset day in and day out now that I've experienced what it's like to be grateful.
Oh, that is so well said, Serena. So well said, and I know what you mean. And when you thank other people, it feels so good to you. It feels good to them, but it also feels good to you, and you never know how far that is going to go. I have a quote here by your dad that says, "You, a person with a vision, are like a pebble in a stream moving ever outward to infinity, impacting all who come in contact with the ripple." And, yeah, like you said, you had no idea when you wrote that letter how far that ripple was going to go after he got a hold of it and inspired.
Right, and I've had that experience a few different times in my life. That's just been such a reminder to me, and I had it not that long ago, actually in a yoga class. And mm-hmm. anybody that knows me knows I am not somebody that historically has loved to exercise. So mm-hmm. going to a yoga class is a lot of work for me. It's just work for me. I'm really trying to enjoy it and to calm my mind, but it's hard. And I was in the class, and it was the very end, and I was so grateful that I made it through and that I did all the poses, and I was laying there in mm-hmm. the last pose, which I guess is supposed to be like a meditation pose, mm-hmm. and it hit me. And I'll never forget it, because what hit me was this idea that there's a huge difference in optimism and gratefulness or gratitude. It's almost like they're opposites. I know people mm-hmm. that are optimistic mm-hmm. because they're often hoping and praying and believing that things are going to work out for the good in the end. Right. And I realized in that class that gratitude is knowing that whatever you're in, it is going to work out in the end, no matter how dark or sad or lonely it is where you are right now. Gratitude is the ability to say thank you even for that, because you have the knowing that it's going to get better, that the sun is going to be shining behind the clouds. And I have had to learn that firsthand, because I've been through a period of hoping and wishing that things mm-hmm. would change. Mm-hmm. And I've literally shifted my mentality to be grateful, to express gratitude, and literally to say thank you, even when things are not going my way, because I know that they will in the end. And I know that I'll learn something and grow from whatever it is that I'm going through. So I think for me, gratitude has actually become like the biggest theme in my life at this point.
You know, it is for me, too. And I'm so grateful for being able to have this conversation with you, and I wish it could go on a lot longer, but we've only got a couple of minutes left. And so I wanted to make sure that people go visit your website, www.serenadyer.com, SERENADYER.com. And I'd also like to mention that next week, on Wednesday the 12th, my guest will be Michelle Phillips. And Michelle is a best-selling Hay House author of a book titled The Beauty Blueprint, and we're going to be talking about why she was inspired to write it, and also about self-esteem, which is a big part of that. I also wanted to find out, when is your book due? Your book, Don't Die With Your Music Still In You, do you know when that's coming out?
Mm-hmm. That comes out June 16th. It's actually on Amazon right now for pre-order, but it's not released until June 16th.
Yes, I've seen it on Amazon, and I've got it in my wish list to order as soon as it comes out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm really, really, really looking forward to reading that. And I actually would love to have gotten it as a gift from my son for Mother's Day, but it's not going to be out in time for that. But I can have him pre-order it for me for Mother's Day.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
yeah. Oh, Serena, I just love hearing what you had to say, and like I said, I'm so looking forward to reading your book and hearing more from you, and I hope that people will watch that PBS show and also get your book and start remembering to be grateful. So that's what I got out of this call more than anything, is let's all be grateful for the life lessons that we have and for everything that's going right in our life as well, but also, like you said, for the lessons that we get when things seem to be going weird and wrong.
Right. Yeah, well, it was lovely to talk to you, too, and I'm grateful for this opportunity in this moment, because you know, starting out as a new first-time author, you never know what to expect. And I have maintained an attitude of everything that comes my way, I will say yes to, and I will fully arrive for. And so far, I think that the universe is giving me even more than I thought. So thank you for allowing me this opportunity.
You're welcome. Anyway, I've got to go, and the episode has ended. So bye for now, and I'll hope to talk to you again soon after your book comes out.
I would love to.
Bye.
Bye.